The issues that matter most, right here. The Drew Mariani Show
on Relevant Radio.
Dad joke of the day. Have you ever heard of a music group called Cellophane? They mostly rap.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Oh, I love that, love that, love that. Good afternoon and welcome. That's a corny dad joke, right? It certainly is. Well, I first want to say happy feast to the one of the greatest fathers of all time, St. Joseph, right? Let's send out a shout to St. Joseph and all you Josephs out there named after him today. Well, normally his feast day is on March 19th, right? But since yesterday was Sunday in Lent, it got transferred to today. I don't have any idea what the family life of Jesus was like, but I bet you St. Joseph told some dad jokes. You know, come on. I think humor is a sign of intelligence. I have always said that. And even some of these corny dad jokes are good. My kids always tell me, Dad, stop. You know, because I tell these horrible, horrible jokes. I wonder if St. Joseph ever had some good ones. You know, there was a new study that was published in The Psychologist. It's a British Psychology Society. And they found that dad jokes are actually good for kids. There are various definitions of dad jokes, none of them very flattering, but how you define them, they ultimately embarrass, I guess, your kids. I don't know. I think they're funny. I'll give you a few of them that I came across, right? How about this one? Why did the golfer bring two pairs of pants? Say that to your kids. I don't know, Dad, why? Casey got a hole in one. Maggie turned away from the board. You got to get me some sound effects. I need that drum roll, Maggie. You know, the one I've always used, and I didn't really realize this was a dad joke, but I would say, oh, man, I'm on a diet. Really? Yeah, I'm on a seafood diet. I see food and I eat it. Ba-dum, boom. Now, that is a dad joke. A few for tonight. The humor researcher, he said, teaches your kids that there are far more things to life than being embarrassed, and they can eventually even help the kids survive being embarrassed. I don't know what the study is or what the study group was or how they viewed this, but I don't know. I think dads just like those simple little jokes. Here's another one. Ready for this one? What's Forrest Gump's password? One Forrest, one. Now, that's ridiculous. One Forrest, one.
Are these a collection of your personal dad jokes?
No, a few of them are, but I saw somebody send me these this morning. I'm like, that is hilarious.
Oh, my gosh.
One. If you never saw Forrest Gump, you know, it's run, Forrest, run. How about this one? If two vegetarians get in an argument, is it still called a beef? Come on now. That's hilarious. Now, the classic dad jokes are really stupid. Here's a stupid one. Can a kangaroo jump higher than a house? Of course, houses can jump, right? That's so silly, right? Here's the other one. What's the strongest day of the week? Saturday and Sunday. Well, why? Because they're weekdays. The others are weekdays. I think I screwed that one up. I think I messed that up, right? See, that's why my wife tells me, never tell a joke on the air, Drew. Never tell a joke. Let me try that again. What are the strongest days of the week? Saturday and Sunday. All others are weekdays. That's why they're the strongest. All right, I better stop, right? I better stop while I can. How about one last one? Why did the Scarecrow win an award? He was outstanding in his field. Ba-dum, boom. Get it? Thank you. Finally, I got a round of applause. Woo! That's hilarious. I haven't spoken to my wife in 4 years. I thought it'd be rude to interrupt her.
That's pretty good.
That's funny. When I read that, I laughed. My wife probably says that about me because I never stop talking, right? Never stop talking. What's the difference between a man's wallet and what's the difference between a man's wallet before and after kids? There are pictures where the money used to be. So, there you have it. All right, I'll stop. I will stop. Many more to come. Dad jokes. I find them funny. If they made you chuckle, then they worked, right? That's not bad. not bad at all. But more jokes to come. Some of those are pretty good. You can always send us in your dad jokes, too, if you think you've got a great one. Hey, we got a lot to get into today, though. I want to dive into the news that broke over the weekend that Trump was going to be arrested, right? What's up with that? Maggie was telling me. Maggie, open your mic, too. Maybe you could share that. You said that who was it that made the case that if Trump got arrested, he would win the election?
I think it was either Elon Musk or Mike Pence. Someone said if he is arrested, he will win the 2024 election.
That's amazing. I mean, honestly, Trump has never been out of the news since he ran for president, right? He ran for 4 years. Then we had COVID and it was over. You would think that he was still president for the years of coverage constantly going after him. And then, of course, we had the January 6th trials and hearings, I should say. And we still have this coming on. I think there's a tremendous, tremendous concern about him somehow running and maybe even winning the election. So, you know, we'll see what happens. We'll see what happens with Donald Trump. But we'll talk about that coming up with James Herson. And then also a little bit later, of course, we'll pray our chaplet. And I want to talk St. Joseph today. If you have had, I don't know, if St. Joseph has helped you find a job, find your spouse, bring about a conversion, then I really want to encourage you to give me a call a little bit later. You'll hear some incredible stories. Maybe you're praying for that future spouse right now. Maybe you're praying for that job. Two people I know, and I'm going to talk to them this afternoon, they found jobs through St. Joseph. And I love that. I think it's pretty cool. Also, on another issue here, tomorrow I'm going to be joined by Father Rehill. Maggie kind of turned me on to him. He's an exorcist. We've been talking a lot about AI. Our conversation with him is going to be off the charts. There's still more weirdness with this AI coming about. So we'll talk more about that coming up soon in the not-too-distant future. So you can join us. Neil sent us a joke. Oh, here comes some. Maybe I won't do news. Maybe we'll do more jokes. What do you got, Maggie?
Neil just sent us an email. He said, what do you call a person with no body and no nose?
No body and no nose. I don't know. What do you call them?
Nobody knows.
That's thanks, pretty good. Neil. Neil, I like that. Nobody knows. I like that. Hilarious. All right. Hey, let's talk a little bit also about what's happening with, the governor of Wyoming, or some other good news, some other bad news. The Wyoming story is an interesting one. I'll tell you what I'm following here. Let's deal with the church. You know, we talked about how the Holy Father was talking about raising or, you know, questioning priestly celibacy. That's not going to be the case. I saw a report today saying, hey, he's not going to make any changes there. But the governor of Wyoming just signed a bill that will outlaw the use of prescription medication, abortion pills. So this is a great story. The law exempts the so-called morning after pills, as well as treatments necessary to treat a mom who's supposedly in imminent peril of death, as well as the treatment of natural miscarriage, according to the currently accepted medical guidelines. And this comes as a federal judge in Texas considered whether the FDA approval of abortion drugs was properly done. And this week also, another story that I thought was well worth mentioning was the new DC super movie that came out, Shazam. I think it's called Shazam Fury of the Gods. It opened and it tanked. It did terrible. I think $12 million in receipts on Friday night. That's nothing. That's change, right? That's according to Deadline. The original Shazam opened. It made $20 million. $20 million. So DC and secular outlets tried to explain the flop by saying, maybe people are just getting tired of superhero movies. I don't think so. It's more likely because there is an openly gay superhero, super character in this new movie. And, you know, something else to consider, the latest entry of Ant-Man apparently is concerned about how misunderstood socialism, and because of that, it suffered one of the largest week-to-week drop-offs in box office history. I think this is good news. You know why? It's showing that, you know, you do have a voice. You do, you know, your dollar speaks. I was talking to Maggie before the program, and I said to her, you know, it's really weird. I said, why would any industry cater to such a minority? Why would you invest millions and millions of dollars into production for what, 4%, 5%, 6% of a particular of a population that claims to have a proclivity or the same sex attraction or whatever it might be, right? Is that what people want to see? Is that what people want to bring their kids to? You know, I really see this whole LGBTQ plus movement right now, this woke ideology. I see these as false religions. I do. I really believe that we're witnessing a new form of paganism. And, you know, it's not about the bottom line. That's their almsgiving. That's their sacrifice, right? They're willing to forego those big box office numbers in order to advance this ideology, to indoctrinate kids, to expose them, to make what is not normal, normal. And again, I want to be very charitable. I have friends that I know, many people that have same-sex attraction, right? Family members you have. I mean, I don't want to be in any way disparaging of that. There's nothing wrong with being same-sex attracted. It's the act, just like it would be immoral for me to act against my state. I'm called to chastity in the state I'm in. You know, it's between my wife and I. I can't go sleeping with whoever I want. And if you are called to the celibate life, or if you're same-sex attracted, then, you know, then unfortunately you have to remain true to that state that God is calling you to. But to take this and to make it so mainstream and to expose children to it, to indoctrinate them to it, it really is. I just see this as a false religion. That's what's happened. It's a form of paganism that we're experiencing today. We're worshiping at these altars. And it's not about money. I say, well, why would you do this? You know that the numbers probably aren't going to be there. You know, why would you do it? Because they're paying their tithe. You know, they're giving their offering, their sacrifice. And unfortunately, it's a dark reality. Tomorrow, when this exorcist joins me, he has said some really incredible things about Hollywood, about the transgender movement, about what we're seeing, about the demonic spirits that sometimes surround this type of stuff. So we'll get into all of that tomorrow. Father Rehill, he's going to be stopping by. Assisted suicide. Canada, of course, is unfortunately just mired in that. But there are states here in our own country, 8 states with assisted suicide bills in their legislative sessions. Arizona, Connecticut, Indiana, Maryland, Massachusetts, Minnesota, Nevada, New York, Rhode Island, and Virginia. They all have had bills this session related to legalizing this practice. And again, it goes back to what I was just saying, doesn't it? I mean, we can kill children in the womb. That was once so abhorrent. It has become mainstream today. So what's the natural progression of that? Kill the end of life too, right? Life does not have value. Life does not have value. It's an attack, again, of the evil one on all that God gives us, you know, and our reflection of God to be a family, a union of a man and a woman, to bring forth life in that creative process, right? To respect life at all stages. We're seeing an attack on the family, we're seeing an attack on marriage, and we're seeing an attack on life at all of its stages. So I'd invite you to pray that does not become a reality in our own country, because I think, again, that type of stuff just calls down the justice of God. I really do. We got a lot to get into today. Should I take another call or two? All right, let me take one quick joke. We'll lighten it up here quickly, and then I'll change gears. We'll talk about Donald Trump. Merrill is listening in Huntington Beach, California. Merrill, good afternoon. Thanks for calling in.
Good afternoon, Father.
That's Drew, not Father Drew, but it's great to have you with me.
I'm sorry.
No, it's okay. I am a father of 5, so I guess you're not wrong, Merrill.
Wow.
Boom, boom.
Okay. That's cute. Drew, what's invisible and smells like carrots?
Gosh, I wouldn't know. What's invisible and smells like carrots? I don't know.
Bunny farts.
Merrill. Where'd you hear that one?
Gosh,
I've heard that a long time ago, and I tell it to all my my kids when they were younger, all my nieces and nephews, and because they can get it, it's cute.
Yeah, kids love that bathroom humor, don't they? That's so funny. Hey, thank you, Merrill.
And they're passing it on. You're welcome.
But they are. You. Sometimes you get one of those jokes or two of those jokes that just seem to stick with you. So. That's so funny. Well, thank you, Merrill, for the call. You heard also that Vladimir Putin, there's been an arrest warrant for him. You probably heard about Trump, so we'll talk about that coming up right now. Putin, the International Criminal Court, this court has a little bit of weight, has issued an arrest warrant for Vladimir Putin on charges of war crimes and personally saying that, hey, he was responsible for the kidnapping of children. And this is what the court said. I'll give you a quick liner, and then James Hurston is going to be joining us here. It says, Putin is allegedly responsible for the war crime of unlawful deportation of children and that unlawful transfer of children from occupied areas of Ukraine to the Russian Federation. This came out on Saturday, just a couple days before the Chinese leader, Xi Jinping, was to visit Moscow. And the leaders of the Uyghurs are calling for the same court to do the same thing for Xi Jinping, to call for his arrest. And we've talked about the horrors that have happened there. But Donald Trump has an arrest warrant for him. Will this become a reality, or will this pass? There are indications that Donald Trump will be indicted this week on charges of paying cover-up money to former porn star Stormy Daniels and using the funds from one of his companies to do so. And the federal prosecutor is a guy named Alvin Bragg. He's planning to indict Trump on a felony charge. But a number of people are crying foul. The former prosecutor, we reached out to Andy McCarthy today. He said to our team here, look, this is just a nakedly political move. That's what it is. Apparently, Bragg got to office after being helped with funds from the leftist billionaire George Soros. So it makes it appear as though the president wants to embarrass his predecessor, which is probably not a good idea. And Ron DeSantis, I think the Florida governor summed it up best when he said, look, I don't know what goes into paying hush money to any porn star to secure silence over some type of alleged affair. I can't speak to that, he says, but I can speak to the fact that if you have a prosecutor who's ignoring crimes happening every single day in his jurisdiction and chooses to go back years ago, try to find something about a porn star hush money payment, that's an example of pursuing a political agenda and weaponizing the office. And I think that's fundamentally wrong. And I thought that was a great insight by DeSantis. I think he is right on the money. Joining me today to talk about is James Hurston, New York Times bestselling author. Check him out. He writes the Left Coast Report for Newsmax.com. It's always good to have him back with us. His Twitter handle, too. You can follow him at the Jim Jams. Mr. Hurston, good afternoon. Welcome back.
Great to be with you, Drew. How are you?
I'm well. A lot of arrest warrants out there, right? People calling for Xi Jinping. Vladimir Putin has one from the International Court. Trump's under the microscope right now. Let's talk Trump. Is this charge just a misdemeanor? Is it a felony? Why now is this coming up? What kind of legs does it have?
Well, what's amazing about this? The Justice Department a long time ago rejected it as being too weak. There wasn't enough evidence. There really wasn't a violation of the law. They dropped it. And before Alvin Bragg was there was a guy named Cyrus Vance, also a very partisan person, a Democrat. Cyrus Vance dropped it because it was too weak. So, and we're pretty much talking about the same set of facts. The misdemeanor cannot be brought. The reason is the statute has a statute of limitations of a period of 2 years. And so that can only be extended with an argument if it's a felony. And the only way it can be a felony is to twist a New York statute that talks about the cover-up of a state crime, cover-up of a more serious felony like murder. And what they're trying to do is say, well, this bookkeeping entry was intentionally fraudulent to cover up a crime of a campaign finance violation, which is a federal crime, which creates another weakness in the case, because this is a Manhattan attorney that doesn't have jurisdiction over federal crimes at all, and it violates the intent of the state statute. So this thing, In essence, most lawyers would analyze this and say it's a joke. Senator Ted Cruz called it excrement and used a more streety term.
I like the way you put that. Very clever. What do you make of DeSantis? I thought the point he brought up was just, I think it was spot on.
He rejected it. The Justice Department. This is a Soros-funded prosecutor, much like the one that we have out here in Los Angeles, one in San Francisco, in Chicago, in St. Louis. And they all have the same philosophy, and that is to let felons avoid jail time. Oh. And that's what he specialized in. That's why New York's crime rate is through the roof. And so while he's not prosecuting criminals who are hurting people and murdering people, he spends all of his time and his resources on this politically based revenge prosecution. And so under any legal analysis applying the rule of law, a judge would have to dismiss this. If the defense makes a motion to dismiss, it would be dismissed. But we live in a strange world these days, and we have judges who don't follow the rule of law, and we know this is the case. And so we don't know what would in theory happen, and I think that's part of the motivation of this political prosecution, is relying on the fact that he can shop for a judge that will keep this case alive and maybe even keep it alive long enough so that they can add other cases. And the whole idea is to take Donald Trump off the political chessboard.
Yeah, it's been nonstop, hasn't it, from when he first ran till when he was out of office. I remember my wife making that comment. You would think he was still in office with the coverage that some of the left-wing media's, you know, has been, you know, the way they've been covering events post, you know, the fact that he's out of office. Of course, we had the insurrection, or the I don't even like to use that word, really. The the riot. The insurrection is such a strong word. January 6th. I don't want to diverge too much. How would you define that? Would you use the word insurrection to describe that?
Well, I've never heard of an insurrection historically that had tour guides,
yeah, right,
or had velvet ropes, or people were taking selfies, and they didn't bring any weapons. So right. I think the insurrection label is a political label that was given to it. Certainly there were bad things that happened, and there's some people that engaged in what, you know, in criminal behavior.
Sure.
But the over-the-top treatment of these grandmothers that are doing hard time is un-American. And but the fact is, this, if this is a political move, what is the political result? Now, here's where even some people on the left are saying to Alvin Bragg, don't do it, because what has the strategy been? It's been to hide Donald Trump,
right,
censor him, move him off of Facebook, move him off of Twitter, put him off in the corner, don't cover his rallies. And now all of a sudden, even with the rumor of an indictment, he's front and center on every headline across the world, and he's back on the public stage. His polls are rising. Wow. Elon Musk, who I just have to say is a brilliant man, tweeted out in response to the rumors about the indictment. He said, now he's going to win in a landslide.
Wow.
That's good analysis, actually. I believe that this is going to arouse sympathy and support for Donald Trump, and it will clearly give him the path where he's already maybe long double digits ahead of any of his competitors in the primaries. He'll get the nomination, but this thing could carry him right back to the White House, which is why you see a lot of people wringing their hands about it, even on MSNBC.
So just a final thought here. If he is arrested, what's that mean for future presidents? I mean, it's a big precedent. That'd be historic.
It is historic. It's never, ever happened before. Now, the normal procedure with a public figure, anybody that's prominent, and especially someone that's being charged with such a white-collar-oriented criminal offense, would be to arrange for Donald Trump discreetly to bring himself in for a booking and have an arraignment and probably be released with some bail or maybe on his own recognizance. And that would be normal. But we've seen abnormal raids occurring. We've seen law enforcement ordered to do things that they wouldn't ordinarily do with the kinds of defendants that they're dealing with. So we don't know exactly what's going to happen. I think this Alvin Bragg clearly detests Donald Trump. He hates him. And that mm-hmm. everyone has the right to dislike any politician, any former president. But that doesn't mean that he's going to use his office this way. That's right. He seems to want a trophy. So he wants that booking photo.
Yeah.
He wants the perp walk. And this is what, unfortunately, some people on far left are tweeting about and salivating about. I pray that that doesn't happen. But,
Amen.
You know, it's part of what we understand. Christians understand unjust persecution.
Well, James, thank you for the perspective. Good to have you here with us today. I know people can follow you online at Twitter at the Jim Jams. Your website is jamesherson.com. And you're still writing the Left Coast Report, right?
Of course.
People can check you out there, newsmax.com. Hey, thank you for being here. Appreciate the time.
Thank you so much, Drew. God bless you.
God bless you. James Herson, and New York Times bestseller. You can check out some of his books as well. I always enjoy his perspective. And, of course, he is a law professor and so much more. I've got to take a short pause. When we come back, a couple things have happened I want to touch on with you. One, COVID has permanently changed the culture as we know it. I saw an interesting piece that really kind of opened my eyes a little bit. I'm like, wow, that's really true. And then the other thing is this. There's been a major decline in the trades right now. America needs technical workers, and our supply is not measuring up. Let me tell you what we're now seeing nationally and what that might mean for you in the not-too-distant future. Don't go away.
Your news, the Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio. Your news now.
This hour is sponsored by Creative Planning. How are you aligning your financial plan with your Catholic values? Is your Catholic faith influencing your financial future? More information, including disclosures, at creativeplanning.com/Catholic Focus.
It's ironic for me to make this point because I've been singing the praises of essential workers for 20 years, but in COVID and in an economy like this, when you take 26 million non-essential workers out of the equation, what happens? The whole thing collapses under its own weight. I would suggest to you right now that there is no such thing as a non-essential worker when it comes to the economy.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
You might remember that voice. That's Mike Rowe. He's host of Dirty Jobs and a lot of other things. Actually, quite a brilliant man. Incredibly articulate. And I've always had a lot of respect for his perspective on the importance of the trades and really highlighting them and what a lot of people go through. True story. You know, I was selling my home. I guess it was in 2021, 2022. I think, yeah, 2022 I moved. So 2021, I had my home up for sale. And before I went to sell it, I wanted to put in, you know, new lighting fixtures and get some stuff fixed and get some things done in the house. I had a light switch that wasn't working right. It was a three-way. So I said, let me call an electrician, right? I called 13 of them, right? 13 of them. These guys were so busy. Of course, you know, that housing, that craziness of everybody selling their home. I was at the tail end of that. But these guys were so busy between, you know, regular work and people selling their homes and other type of jobs. My wife and I couldn't get anybody. I had to get one of my engineers from Relevant to come over here, and he and I did it together. We ended up doing this. So, Chris, thank you for your help. But the guy said to me, he says, you know, I'm so busy. He says, I actually raised, my rates used to be about $55 an hour. He says, I raised them now to over $100 an hour, and I'm still getting more work than I can handle. He raised his rates thinking, okay, I'll make twice as much money, and if work slows down a little bit, I'm still ahead of the game, right? He's just as busy as ever before. You probably see the same thing for plumbers and a whole litany of other areas. How many of you got kids or nieces or nephews or grandkids that went to college? They've got their degrees in psychology or history or whatever it might be, right? And they're doing a job totally different than they studied for. Now they got student loans. They've got, you know, lots of debt. and they're paying that off, and they're in a job that has nothing to do with it. They could have went into another area, another field, and saved all of those loans. Now, I'm not an advocate of not going to school. If you can go to school, if you feel called, if it's your vocation, great. I mean, those who get college degrees, they tend to earn more in the long run over the life of their career. But I don't know how true that is anymore. That used to be the case. There was a survey done by the Associated General Contractors of America. They found that 91% of companies, okay, 91% are having trouble staffing their job sites because they can't find people to work. Oh, it's true, right? I mean, that's insane numbers. 91%. They're having trouble because they can't find people to work. As the website Construction Dive reported, that means that the federal infrastructure projects, they're going to be harder to get done. You know, everything that our current president wants to get done. And we need I'm all pro infrastructure. I'd love to see it updated. I think our bridges are bad. I think there's a lot of problems that should be remedied. But that means jobs are going to take longer to complete. And in some industries, you know, like I said, bridges, dams, power grids, I mean, a lot of this stuff compromises American safety. So why is it happening? You know, why is this happening? And how do we remedy this? And maybe you're going through the same thing. You can join us here, 888-914-9149. I've invited Jacob Iman to stop by. He hails from the Harmel Academy in Michigan. It's a trade school that teaches the Catholic understanding of work. And in Steubenville, there's a new school that's going to be starting that's separate from Franciscan University. And Jacob is founding that school as he heads up the Steubenville workshop. Jacob, good to have you with us. Good afternoon.
Hey, thanks so much. It's great to be with you. I have to say, I'm a huge fan of the guys over at Harmel, but sadly, I'm not amongst their robust team.
So you're the Steubenville guy.
Luminous guys.
I'm sorry about that.
Yeah, that right.
No
problem at all. I just didn't want to steal their thunder.
No, that's great. No, my producer was telling me, oh, you're going to love this guy, Jacob. We'll put him on. I think that's great. Well, no, it's good. I appreciate it. I'm glad to see more of this. You've got Harmel. You've got Steubenville. There was a place called Williamson Trade School in in Pennsylvania, and a buddy of mine lived right next to it when I went to grade school and high school. And I remember his father, who was a math teacher, professor at one point in time, actually taught there as well. I find that I've been following this stuff, Jacob, because I think we are really in trouble right now. People who fix elevators can make six-figure salaries. True story, and then I want your perspective on it. When I was doing production at one point in time, a group of medical doctors hired me to do a real short video on their practice and some series that they wanted to launch, right? So I go back to this physician's home, to meet with him. We're sitting down and talking, and I pull up. The neighborhood's beautiful, gated. His home was giant. And you see the guy across the street from me? I said, yeah. He says, that guy's an attorney. I said, oh, yeah, this guy over here, he's the head of corporate whatever, right? Then to the other side of him, home, just as beautiful and big, he says, that guy owns an auto body shop. And he says, you see this guy right next to me? He owns a hair salon. And I'm thinking, you know, you don't need to be, you know, some sort of corporate guru or a physician or an attorney to really be successful. And those guys were making it in an area where a lot of people aren't going. So give me your take on this. Why aren't we seeing this generation want to go and pick up trades like electrical or plumbing or something else, mechanical?
You know what? There's a host of reasons. The biggest thing why there has been this 49% drop of people applying for the skilled trades over the last 2 years is partly just because of COVID, right? Or the last 3 years, rather. People are scared to take on any job that's not remote because they could be out of work for some time. So that's certainly true. But of course, this is a much larger trend than the last few years. And I think there's no point in kind of beating around the bush on it, is that a lot of people have a stigma against manual labor. And this has always happened. Cicero spoke against it. Aristotle spoke against it. And John Paul II said that Christ is really the first person to upend that way of thinking, to show the dignity of manual labor. And so I think that there's certainly a some sort of almost philosophical, I mean, really even theological problem that people have against the trades. Completely missing the real dignity of the trades as well. You mentioned earlier that college students often out-earn the blue collar trades. By my calculations, I went through and I researched this for a while. The average blue collar tradesman who's in the main construction trades, plumbing, HVAC, masonry, carpentry, and electrical, they'll out earn the average the person with an undergraduate degree until they're 52 years old. And that's never with the same debt that's shackling them.
That's stunning.
Years, especially.
I don't mean to step on you. No, Jacob, that's great. You'll have to share. I mean, so they will out-earn them up to age 52. And then what happens? And then things begin to change at that point in time? Why is that? Do you know?
No, you know what? It's just in terms of how much they have earned year over year as they tracking their total net assets as a person. That's how I've tracked it by. And so at that point, the person is out of debt for the most part, usually from their student loans. They're making just a few thousand dollars more a year, maybe in some cases several. But, you know, if you're just tracking the average of those five trades, you're doing really well. And if you're a plumber and electrician, you're always going to out-earn the average undergrad.
Yeah, there's 30 million jobs in the U.S. right now that pay an average of $55,000 per year that don't require a bachelor's degree. That's according to Georgetown analysis. Yeah. That's amazing. And to your point, I mean, that's a fascinating stat. I'm delighted to see that. Student debt is rising. Two-thirds of those with degrees say the debt was not worth it. And because they, like I said in the very beginning here, I know so many people who have, you know, their history degree or their sociology degree or their psychology degree, and they never go beyond that. And, you know, it's hard to really apply some of those degrees, and they end up doing jobs that are totally different. They could have saved themselves 4 years tuition by going into a different field. Let's grab a couple calls for you. John's in Philadelphia. John, good afternoon. You're on the air with Jacob Eamon.
Yeah, hi, Drew. Say, is it true that about 50% of the men don't want to work in this country?
That's a great question. I don't know. Jacob, are you familiar with the work ethic?
You know what? I don't know too much about that stat, but by the look of most guys on job sites today, I'd say it's closer to 100%, man.
Yeah, that's true.
I think that there is a problem. You know, there's so much easy consumption that's happening that the market as a whole is designed to make us more into consumers rather than producers. So it makes sense that there's a decline in work ethic.
John, to your point, and again, I don't have the empirical data in front of me, but to your point, just from what I observe, I mean, you take a look at how many places are closing because they don't have people to work for them. I was sharing, Jacob, during the pandemic, there was a great pizza place where I live, right? They had two of these restaurants, and they came from New York. They made the best pizza around, right? And I loved it. And I went in there one day, and they told me they were closing the store. I'm like, why are you closing it? Oh, my gosh, you're always so busy. Things always look great. I'm going to hate to see you go. He says, well, we just can't get enough people to work. And so it wasn't that they didn't have the business. They couldn't staff the place. They had to close that particular restaurant. And during the pandemic, you saw a lot of people take their checks, and they're like, I'd rather stay home than go and work. I think work ethic is a big, big thing here, and I think that's one of the reasons people may not go into the trades. Your thoughts?
Man, I wish that, that we can have an easy policy solution to so many of these problems. But the truth of the matter is that we form new institutions and new policies based upon the desires of our heart. Yeah. You are never going to have a major transformation in society without a conversion of a soul. It just doesn't happen. It never has happened and it won't happen. So we have to go back to first things first here. You know, we can create new things and new opportunities and market them really well. But if we aren't really raising the next generation of people to have a new lens on what is the good and how to achieve it, then our policy efforts are going to be all for naught, really.
Well, I'm glad you said that. I know you got to run. So the bottom line here is you think there should be a Catholic approach to this. How do we do that? I mean, I know that your schools are starting to do that. We need more of those. Maybe you can put a big plug in for them as well. But how do we shine that light of truth that you talk about on the work ethic and on the need to fulfill these different areas of society that are so critical?
You know what? So much of our evangelical efforts have been trying to teach people to believe something different. And of course, that's important. The creed is essential. You must profess it. But the truth of the matter is that we are so often converting to Christ, kind of believing new things, but the pattern and the order of our life doesn't look all that much different from the average spiritual but not religious American. And so I think that the solution to a real societal shift has to be one that we realize that Christianity is more than just something that's sentimental, but actually is going to upend the institutions that we have and that are going to generate new ones that put a huge mission in mind to realize that this is transformative from the bottom up. And from the heart out.
Jacob, your school in it's Steubenville, is that where it is? It's Steubenville Workshop, is that what it's called?
Yeah, we are currently operating as a community workshop. So if you think about a model for a gym, people can't buy gym equipment because it's too big or too expensive, and the same problem ails woodworkers. So we've set up a community wood shop here in downtown Steubenville, which is a dilapidated Rust Belt town, and we are getting people back to work, getting them access to productive property, helping them supplement their incomes or just quit their jobs altogether to work out of the shop. And so we're hoping to launch into a full trade school where we simultaneously train people in the Catholic intellectual tradition to get their BA degrees while also in the skilled trades. We're hoping that comes around the corner pretty soon.
So well, people want, they want more information. How do they get connected to you?
You know, if you look at this, Steubenvilleworkshop.com. Right. You'll find us there.
Sounds hey, thank you for making time for us today. Appreciate you being here.
True.
Got to leave it right there.
True. Thanks so much.
You got it. Jacob Imam.
Wonderful. Thank you.
And you can check out the Steubenville Workshop. I'll take a few of your calls on the other side. Let me know what you are experiencing. We can talk about it. Hey, if you're in the market for health insurance, well, our sponsor, the Catholic Order of Foresters, is here to help you and your family find the most cost-effective health plan. Learn more at relevantradio.com/Forrester.
The Chaplet of Divine Mercy, live, coming up. You're listening to The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Yeah, that powerhouse prayer coming up in T-minus 10 minutes. We'll pray together. So if you've got a need, you're going through a difficult time, or you know somebody else who is, feel free to join us. I'll give you the number early. It's 888-914-9149. Do somebody a favor today. Introduce them to Divine Mercy. Ask them to pray, with you, especially if they're going through a tough time. Maybe it's your kids. Maybe it's your business partner. Right? Maybe it's the sale of that house. You know, maybe it's your daughter praying for her husband. I don't know. Maybe it's the person going in for surgery. Why not join us? We'll pray this chapel. We're hearing great things. Lots of answered prayers coming in every day. You know, lots of intentions coming in as well. You know, we were talking a little bit about finding people to work, and my heart goes out to a lot of people who've really built their business. I've got a buddy who's into auto body, and he's done very well. His dad started the business. He took it over. I remember when I was moving, I was mentioning I had to leave, and coincidentally, like my air conditioning unit died. Like when I went to put my home up for sale, so I had to have a new air conditioning unit put in, right? I put so much money into the sale of my house, it was ridiculous. So the HVAC guy comes out, and he's working outside, and I'm hanging out with him. I'm a talker. I was talking to him about the business, and he says, "Hey, well, how's it going, man? You must be booming." I think so. He says, "You know, Drew," he says, "I cannot get people to work with me. I cannot find help. Yeah, I just can't get it." He says, "You know, I tried to turn this business over to my children. They don't want it, right? So I've had some people come on. I've trained them. They don't stay, and they end up leaving. I just can't get anyone. I don't know who's going to take over my business. Maybe nobody." And I'm thinking, you know, it's such a lucrative industry for somebody who wants to set their own time. Yeah, you got to work with your hands. Sometimes you got to work in the heat. Sometimes you got to get dirty. Sometimes you got to work in the cold. And those businesses can be tough. You know, even the septic tank guy who empties, you know, who drives the honey truck, you know, as they call it, the honey pot. Is that what they call it, Maggie? You know, they have this very strange name for it. But, you know, those guys make bank. I was talking to this guy, and it's pretty amazing how big his fleet is getting. So anyway, it goes on and on. So, look, if you're discerning your vocation, There's something very dignified in work, and I think we've lost that. We've become a very egocentric, self-centered culture, and even personally, I think we have to do our own personal evaluation on that as well. You know, we're always about comfort and me. Sometimes service can be incredibly noble and incredibly dignified. You know, things are changing, too. I was looking at COVID, and I came across an article over the weekend, and it was kind of an eye-opener. Not only are we having trouble with you know, people getting into the trades, electricians, plumbers, and things along those lines, but have you thought about it? I was at Mass, and my son was visiting, so we went to Mass, and my wife leans over to me. She says, tell Brett, don't shake hands, because they don't do it at this church anymore. So nobody shakes hands at Mass, which is cool. I'm down with that, right? And you just raise your hand. Hey, peace to the people around you. But if you notice that has gone on, COVID is over, but really nobody does it anymore. Like I said, I don't really have an issue with having to shake a hand or not. I could extend peace in some visual way. But a lot of other changes have happened as well. COVID changes like social distancing measures, retail mask mandates. They were short term and they're pretty much gone. I don't really socially distance or wear a mask, but a lot of people got very comfortable with the digital experience. And I think this is a good thing. I mean, so how many people would never have shopped online? You know, especially an older generation, they're afraid of their credit card being stolen or they don't know how to use this. How many people discovered Amazon, right? How many people discovered e-commerce? And I've fallen in love with it. My concern is it could become addictive and people get overspent. You get in this habit of wanting to buy. It shows up at your door. It's kind of fulfilling. But every retailer shifted towards e-commerce, including offering, buy online. You can pick it up at the store. It's a safer way. The Walmart Plus membership program had unlimited free delivery from stores for orders that were over 35. Of course, Amazon, if you had their, you paid their fee, their annual fee, you got free delivery. So, I think retailers realized, hey, this is great. But the other thing that came out of it, have you noticed this too? Shorter store hours. Stores aren't open like they used to be. You know, they used to be, some stores were open 24 hours. Not anymore. You know, 3 years ago, this week, believe it or not, stores started cutting hours or temporarily closing their doors. Walmart was 24/7, I think, as of March 15, 2020. When hours were reduced, and they reduced a second time days later, but most of Walmart stores nationwide are only open now 6 a.m. to 11 p.m. That's still a long day, right? But we see this with COVID, a lot of other places. Those are all changing. Everyone got used to shortages, right? Supply chain was a big issue for people. You had that big run on toilet paper in 2020 and hand sanitizers. People stocked up, but we've seen baby formula recalls. There's been egg shortages recently, a lot of different things going on. And even Black Friday, which I don't think was a bad thing, temporarily closed stores, and some stores didn't open again on Good Friday. So a lot of different things. One final thing here, and I'll grab a call or two. Well, let me go grab this call. One final thing I think that came out of this, I don't know how you feel about it. Most people don't like it. Your menu when you go into a restaurant, right? It's a QR code now. So you need to scan it with your phone in order to see the menu. A lot of restaurants have stayed with that, although 88% of people say, nah, I want a real menu. Todd in Lexington, good afternoon. Thanks for joining me.
Hi, Drew.
Hey.
I retired after 28 years in an auto manufacturing facility back in August. I'm in my 60s. My email inbox, every day I have offers from somebody telling me that I would be a good fit for them, because they're looking for people. And interestingly enough, the job where I worked back when I first went there was one of the most prized jobs in the area, in the Lexington area, to get. Now they're advertising to get people to come to work for them. And there's no guarantee when they hire them that they're going to stay, because, well, maybe I don't like the physical nature of the work. It's hard work. And they're right back to advertising again for more people.
Wow. That is something else. So how do you like retirement, Todd?
Well, I'm retired, but I'm also doing some work for some friends of mine.
Good for you.
I didn't retire just to retire. Right. I like to work. I just can't see myself going and not having something to do.
Yeah, I'm with you. Hey, well, thanks for the call. Appreciate that perspective. Right. I'm going to leave it right there because I got to pray. Chaplet is straight ahead. If you're on hold, I'll do my best to get you on the air. If God has heard your prayer, He's answering. If there's miracles in your lives, email me, Drew@relevantradio.com. Let's share those, and we'll pray for one when I return.